Do you ever ask yourself what's preventing you from achieving your goals or what's interfering with your happiness? Then perhaps it's time to check out our sponsor, BetterHelp.com. Guys, we know the last 2 years have been a whirlwind of emotions, but the good news is that one, you're not alone in this, and two, there is help out there if you need it. BetterHelp will assess your needs and match you with their own licensed professional therapist. You can connect with them in a safe and private online environment, so it's convenient, and you can start communicating in under 48 hours. This is not a crisis line. This is not a self-help line. It is professional counseling done securely online. You can send a message to your counselor anytime. You'll get timely and thoughtful responses. Plus, you can schedule weekly video or phone sessions, all without ever having to sit in an uncomfortable waiting room or leave your house. They have services offered around the world, and they have professional counselors that are experts in depression, stress, anxiety, relationship issues, anger, family conflicts, and so much more. Everything that you share with them is confidential, and this is a safe, convenient, and professional way of getting help that you need. We want you to start living a happier life today. So as a listener, you'll get 10% off your first month by visiting our sponsor at betterhelp.com/listener. Join over 1 million people who have taken charge of their mental health. That's betterhelp, HELP.com/listener.
This is the Outlap F1 podcast featuring America's own John, James, Andy, and Deanna, your one-stop shop for Formula One news, insights, race previews, and reviews. Join us on the Outlap.
Welcome to season 4, episode number 1 of the Outlap F1 podcast. I don't know exactly what we're going to call this episode, but this is our Ask Us Anything episode. You've got Andy. I'm along with John and Deanna. Welcome to 2022 and podcasting for us. How are we doing?
Doing great. It's been a while since I've done this. Kind of took an extended break after Abu Dhabi.
Do we remember where all the buttons go?
We'll see.
Yeah, that's fair. It's the first time I've turned on my personal PC, I think, since Abu Dhabi review, I think, because it's just been collecting dust over there. But yeah, 2022 has started off pretty shitty. Had a couple of passings in the family, unfortunately. Yeah, it's just been one. Hopefully we're getting all the terribleness out of the way, you know, early end, and hopefully smooth sailing from here. But yeah, so I, as well as Deanna, took a little extended break after Abu Dhabi to reset and be there with family. So happy to be back. And yeah, season 4. And you know, I knew you were going to say that, but it sounded weird when you said it. Not gonna lie. But yeah, it's happy to start another journey.
Yeah, we will see. What 2022 is going to be an interesting year for sure.
Sounds like we've got some good stuff in the pipeline too.
Yeah, so we do. We've got some stuff that eminently we will be able to disclose. We kind of hinted at it a little bit. It's getting one step closer every time we do this. So we will disclose when we can. But in the meantime, you can find our show on Twitter, Instagram, Discord, Reddit, and YouTube at Outlap F1 Podcast. If you are watching this on YouTube, please do us a solid. Click that like and subscribe button, or click that 5-star review if you are on your favorite podcasting app. And especially if it lets you do that, because that helps us out quite a bit. You can email our show at chatnow@outlapf1.com. You can check out our wonderful website, www.outlapf1.com. We will be recording, before the new season starts, a new F1 for Beginners. So the 2022 version will be here before you know it. Deanna's Relap channel continues to do great things. Please check out her Abu Dhabi recap and way too early 2022 predictions. As she would say, it's a great time. I made you start to giggle over there. What was that for?
Oh, it's just that channel. I mean, at the moment, it'll come back eventually. There's just nothing going on over there at the moment. I needed a little break.
That's all right.
I mean, it was a very, very long season. And yes, this was going to be even longer. So, you know, like our sponsor this week, BetterHelp.com, take care of yourself mentally. You know, your mental health is equally, if not more important than your physical health. So I know I've been hitting the gym hard this, you know, since the new year, setting my new year off right in that regard. But yeah, the mental side of things, it's good to
good to reset. So nothing wrong with that, Deanna.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, reset, restart. You got to do that kind of stuff. So that's all good. Outlap F1 Nation continues to love us, and we thank everybody for doing that. The newest member of Outlap F1 Nation, Cody Walsh, thank you very much for becoming monthly contributor. And as well to all the other members, Kevin Kelly, Regan Stanzak, Richard Cole, Travis Colby, Tim Brown, Hillary LaRose, Mary Brown, and of course, Matt Polanski from the Red Sector Motor GP podcast. We are super, super humbled, and it's great to have people monthly contributors. So that's awesome. If you would like to become a member of the Outlap F1 Nation, please do check out our support page, $1, $5, whatever you would like to give. As you've hopefully heard throughout the course of season 3, it's all gone to make the show better, and we appreciate anything anyone wants to give. Just as a final reminder, we do have our partnership with the good folks at Manscaped. Please do check out our code OUTLAP, get the 20% off, get the free shipping. We are, as always, proud to bring that to you. And finally, our new sponsor, BetterHelp.com/listener. Join over 1 million people who have taken charge of their mental health. And this is a year to do that, if there ever was one. Again, that's BetterHelp.com/listener. We are also very proud to bring that to you. That's a sponsor I'm very happy that has signed on with us. So before we get into kind of our questions and answers, which all came from you, the listener, we do have some news we do want to talk about. First thing, the 2022 season is going to be here before we know it, and we're going to be into all sorts of stuff, and the car launch confirmations are coming relatively quickly now. Aston Martin kicked it off. They will reveal their 2022 Challenger on February 10th. McLaren revealed today that they are revealing their Formula One Challenger, their IndyCar Challenger, their Extreme E vehicle, and anything related to esports on February the 11th. And Ferrari has announced that they will reveal their 2022 Challenger on February 17th. So that looks to be kind of that lovely Christmas week for an F1 fan when we see all the car launches.
Why don't they do any of this stuff on the weekend? This would be smack dab in the middle of my work day.
Well, I'm hoping that it's at least European time, so maybe it gets up at like 3, 4 in the morning. But,
Oh, yeah, I'd love that.
Yeah, I know, of course. No, I think because they have regular weeks, and they work all the weekends anyway, so I think they give as many weekends off. But yes. I don't know. That's a great question. I always wondered that myself.
Initial thoughts on these three, at least, that we have confirmation. So, one, I'm stoked about Aston Martin. I think they're going to finally change that green so that it doesn't look like...
I hope we get some lime. I really love the lime.
100%, yes. The car needs to pop more on TV. It looks too much like a Mercedes in a distant shot. It's too dark. So hoping we get some lime green. Thankfully, no more pink. Looks like BWT is officially out, heading off to other pastures. Seb's going to get a normal helmet.
One of my all-time favorites.
Because I actually, like, don't tell anybody I said this, but I actually like Lance Stroll's helmet. And excited to see Seb's version of this. McLaren, it's just like take the whole day off, I feel like, with all those announcements. So stoked about that.
Will we get another song this year?
Oh yeah.
I'm sure they're, well and then if Ferrari, if the little 45-second video is anything to, you know, they're going to go all out.
The branding, it looks like they have the little triangles back from the 2019 car, which I really enjoyed. So hopefully go back towards that livery.
I like that. Anyway. And then Ferrari, are we going to get, you know, a dance show? I'm eagerly awaiting. I will wake up early for that.
Yeah. And it better be one solid shade of red.
Yes.
Yes.
It's so easy. It is so easy to do a good Ferrari livery. At least Mission Widow is now no longer.
I mean, if you're a Ferrari designer, you should have the easiest job of anyone in Formula One at minimum. I mean, just paint the damn thing the proper color red.
And then make it glossy and you're done.
Yeah, make it glossy. I'm so tired of this matte. It looks orange to me. So, yes, come on.
And use something other than the Comic Sans font would also be a good idea.
I don't know. You think we'll get anything sooner than Aston Martin? Anything trickling in?
I don't know. I mean...
I think we're getting closer to leak season.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There are definitely a few... mishaps last year.
It's always interesting to me that there's usually no more than two on any one given day, which probably tells me these teams have worked this out. Mm-hmm. You know, they all have their marketing. They all want to get their individual, you know, day in the sun. So I bet you're probably going to have basically that entire week. You basically start on that's a Thursday, the 10th. The Friday is the 211th, and then Ferrari's a week after that. So anywhere within that week, or maybe even, I doubt you'll see anything that weekend, but, you know, anytime around that should be interesting. So
I should probably know this, but what day does testing start? So the third week of February?
I think it's right after that. Okay. I think it's, yes. Yep. I want to say it. And that's the one where we're going to have no live TV coverage. Annoying.
So expect like Williams to make their debut the first day of testing.
Yeah.
Assuming they have a car.
And this is the one time I want to watch testing for like hours on end.
And we're not going to get it. It makes no sense to me.
I mean, I guess I can understand the philosophy around it, kind of still saving up the hype going into the season itself. Wanting more eyeballs kind of on the cars for the first time at that race, but it's still unfortunate.
But let's be honest. I mean, the only people that are going to watch hours upon hours of preseason testing are nerds like us. So
yeah. I also wonder how much it costs to do a broadcast like that for.
That I get, but you don't have to do a full on broadcast like you do like an F1 race. You don't have to have all the cameras. You really just have to have onboards and two people maybe in a broadcast booth in a basement talking.
We'll be happy to do it for you.
I don't think they even need commentators. Like just give me a live stream, like a live feed.
I mean,
a couple of screens and click around and maybe a timing table. Well, yes, a timing table, but
yeah, definitely.
Yes. And that's another thing. They better have the timing table and it better dang well be working right from the get go.
Yep.
Because they usually always take like an hour or two to actually figure out how to turn it back on.
Yeah. So I saw Haas posted their 2021 livery on a, you know, stock image of a 2022 car. And I'm like, this would so be a Haas thing to do, to just show up with like the exact replica of the one the F1 revealed and no changes.
So my question, I think, for these reveals, we've been talking about this for a very long time, so sorry, but are they going to throw these liveries kind of on that stock image? Are we going to see actual cars?
That's a great question.
Are they going to want to reveal anything? Are we going to see weird mule cars from like the 21 cars in 22? Like, I'm just interested to see how they do that, or if it's just renders on the kind of stock version of the car.
I would not be shocked one bit if it's just a rendering on a very plain, boring stock.
In the past, it's almost been team by team, and generally the richer, more affluent teams have actually had their real car there. The ones that are scraping to get there usually don't.
It's been easy in the past few years to just slap it on a 2020 car for the 2021 livery, but you can't do that so much with this one. So be interesting.
Have to do a little bit of work
with the first test in Spain. You don't have to ship it as far. So that's maybe something, but we'll have to see what everybody does.
I feel like nobody's going to want to give out any secrets until they absolutely have to. Cause everything you read is that, you know, it sounds like you got a couple of teams, according to the insiders, a couple of teams, they believe, you know, hit it right on the head of, you know, and,
Is anybody saying we've missed it yet?
Yeah.
Nobody's saying we missed it yet.
Nobody's going to know anything until those cars get on track. I mean, one team can think that they did well, but you can't get comparisons at this stage.
You don't know. Yeah.
Yeah.
And even then, it's really not till like the third or fourth day of testing that you really see some stuff too.
Yeah.
You know, the first couple of days is just system checks and, you know, I'd watch it, but you know, that's just me.
Anyway,
we know that it's coming and we will cover as much of it as we can based on what we have access to. So if anybody wants to give us some, you know, links to some illegal streams, we'll take them.
Yep.
So next story. There's been a lot of movement, at least in terms of team principals this offseason. So just to kind of recap, we know Otmar Szafnauer is out at Aston Martin, replaced by, and you can insert your jokes here, Mike Crack. So he will now take over as the team principal at Aston Martin, working under the guy from McLaren.
I can give it to you in 2 seconds, I think.
Martin Whitmarsh, thank you.
Wow, I really struggle with that.
You can tell this is our first episode this season. We are getting off to a cracking start.
I feel like it's just something. Anyway. Whatever. Continue.
We know Marcin Budkowski is out at Alpine, who apparently is in the middle of cleaning house. And we also know, in a separate story, Alan Prost is no longer going to be affiliated with the Alpine team. So a lot of movement in the team principles. Didn't necessarily expect a lot of this, especially with Alpine. So that's kind of interesting.
Yeah, I guess it is. I mean, it really does seem kind of like rebuild season over in Alpine. To add on, would you like me to read the Prost Instagram caption?
Oh, yeah, please do.
Sure, go for it.
After he was let go. So I think it was just his annual contract was up for renewal and they didn't renew it. And he said, I am very disappointed how this news has been announced today. It was agreed that we would announce together with Alpine. No respect. Sorry. A lot of exclamation points in this thing. Anyway, I have refused the offer made to me in Abu Dhabi for the 2022 season because of a personal relationship and I was right. To the Enstone and Vry team, I will miss you. So not parting on great terms there.
Yeah. That's not a guy who I want to like make angry.
No,
that's a made dude in F1, man. That's a guy who's got connections, and you just have a funny feeling that that's going to come back to bite you at some point.
Yeah, it does kind of seem. I don't see a clear direction over at Alpine yet. I could be very much proved wrong here very quickly, but it just seems like a lot's happening quickly, and we'll see. It could be L plan. 6 months
is over. Yeah. I saw a fake account tweet something like Flavio Briatore is confirmed that is the team principal of Alpine, and I went, it was actually a fairly good knockoff web Twitter handle too. It made me stop for a half a second today, and I went, nope, that's wrong. Keep going.
Oh, I got by the Jean Todt one at like was an advisor at Ferrari. That's not real, or at least not yet.
Well, that's because
there was a very good fake for that.
That's because Joe Seward went ahead and said big Ferrari news, and Ferrari just said, yeah, we'll. We won't do it just to spite you, basically.
Yeah, that's not good.
Yeah, you weren't the only one that got fooled on that one. There's quite a few people.
There's quite a few people.
I at least didn't tweet it out as news. So
right.
Yeah. I clicked the link and then I made sure that it was fake from that point.
There's a fake Chris Medlin account.
Yeah, that one too.
That's getting traction as well enough that he's had to report it for all kinds of shenanigans.
There's a lot. This is literally the time if you're scrolling through Twitter, check out your blue check marked accounts, your correct people, the ones you trust, and because even it's when there's nothing and then there's something, everybody just wants to jump on.
Yeah, this is the time of year just to avoid Twitter.
That's true.
Probably true.
That's been the case for a while, probably
since the end of Abu Dhabi until around when all the car launches kick off. Avoid Twitter. Stay away. There's nothing good happening over there.
Just follow our account. That's all you need.
Yeah, exactly.
And you're good.
We will steer you in the right direction. We do double check our news stories before we tweet them. Or we'll have people correct us if they're wrong, and then we'll fix it that way. So one way or another, we'll get it right.
There's four of us checking each other. So
yes, exactly.
Eventually we'll get there.
And one story from the rumor mill, this is not news, but this would make an interesting pairing if it does happen. There is actually quite a bit of traction to this. Cyril Abitbol is rumored to be joining Red Bull as the head of their in-house engine development. So they would be at RBR Powertrains. Could be headed by Cyril Abitbol joining forces with Christian Horner. So Netflix, if they didn't have enough already, now has one more thing to add to their chapters of stuff.
Deanna, you're right over there?
Yeah, it sounds like somebody's on my roof, but it's fine. It'll be okay.
Christmas is like 3 weeks ago, so.
Yeah, I ran a little late here. Okay, yeah, I don't know what that is. Anyway,
coming your way?
Probably. This would be a fun one for Netflix if it happens, but that's about it. That's all I got to say on this one so far.
Yeah, is this even plausible? I don't know. It's just, maybe there's a lot more to their relationship than what we know. And so much of what we know is from Netflix, you know, and which we all know is spun to, the extreme bullshit that you can get. So, it'd be an interesting story. The guy's just been sitting out there. I've kind of been wondering what he's been up to. So, why not? Let's bring him back.
Yeah.
In the world of all the other moves that we just talked about, and probably even more to come, just add it. I'd see it as being plausible based on all that. So,
yeah. This is the time of the year where anything is plausible. So, I mean, we shall see. We will follow it. We will, if it does break, we will be the first, hopefully, the ones to bring it to you. So, with that, Do we want to take a quick break, pay a couple bills? We'll do that. We'll reset. And so come on back in just a second, and we will get into our Ask Us Anything segment. And these are all crowdsourced questions. So come on back.
Attention listeners from across the galaxy, all the way from Australia to Houston. Do you have a pube problem? If so, our friends at Manscaped have cleared you for takeoff with their fourth generation and brand new Lawnmower 4.0. Kick your pubes to the next planet with the Performance Package 4.0. The orbits in your pants will feel like they're in zero gravity when you use the best tools for the job from the leaders in male grooming. Join the over 2 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped and get your rocket ready for takeoff by going to manscaped.com for 20% off plus free shipping with the code OUTLAP. That's OUTLAP, one word, 20% off, free shipping. Let's get back to it.
Welcome back to Season 4, Episode 1. It's our Ask Us Anything show on the OUTLAP F1 podcast. You've got Andy, John, and Deanna. And we are now going to get into our Ask Us Anything part of the show. And so thank you very much to everybody who contributed a question. It's lovely to get this much interaction from people, especially in the middle of the off season. So we will start with Rachel Fleming, who's a regular contributor to our show. And she asks, she says, got a not F1 question for the upcoming podcast. What do us Brits do that make you guys in the USA find very odd? Just the opposite for her, is she doesn't get any American tipping or the concept of tipping.
Oh, that's a good one. Deanna, any thoughts?
Yeah, I'm going to go with driving on the wrong side of the road because when I was in London, it had been a long week. Anyway, I went to cross the road and I looked left to right and then I almost got run over because I looked the wrong way. Or no, I just looked the wrong way. I don't know. I almost got run over because you drive on the wrong side of the road. Anyway.
I always wonder, though, like, is it really the wrong side of the road if they were there first?
Yes. The, like, vast majority of even Europe drives on the right side of the road.
That is true.
Yeah, I mean, for me, I guess it's the concept of a roundabout. Or how those work. I mean, we kind of have some of them here in the States, but not to the extent like they do over across the pond over there. How do you not get stuck in one, I guess, is my question. Because you could just literally keep turning. And when I've been in cabs that have gone through them when I was in Europe, I always thank God the cabbie knew where he or she was going, because I completely lost my sense of direction. I was in, I'm like, if I was driving, I would be so screwed up right now.
It's yeah, there's some giant ones in DC. And it's just an absolute nightmare. Nobody knows what's going on. It's hard to tell which exit is which street. And it's not fun. It's not a fun time. Anyway.
Let's see. I'll just follow Deanna's theme in saying that we do things better, even though we steal everything from them. The English language, some of the wording bothers me. Like when you go to hospital or go on holiday, I feel like you're missing some, like, I would say I went to the hospital, or I went on a holiday, a vacation. I know it's kind of hilarious for someone from the South who speaks our own form of English to be telling those who actually invented the language, you know, pretty much what to say. But yeah, those drive it. But I watch a stupid amount of English TV, so I've come accustomed to it. Also, I don't know how you drink tea. I mean, I'll drink sweet tea any day, but that
I don't disgusting. Understand the concept of a kettle anyway.
Yeah,
that's been a long
yeah. Someone's gonna have to explain this to
me. I don't know how I didn't think about that, but yeah, kettles are dumb. Like, I just have a microwave, it's fine. The water gets hot, I don't need this
it
whole
seems
extra
like a lot
appliance.
Of work, and especially for someone like you, Deanna, who lives in like 200 square feet, like, where would you even put a kettle? You know, like,
it just had to sit on the stove, like, you know, all the time, and then it would feel all cluttered, and I just have a microwave and it's fine. And I don't even like tea. I don't understand the obsession with tea.
No, I don't either. It's like, I mean, again, I'll drink sweet tea. I'm from the South, but just straight tea, like, I
well, or putting milk in tea. I would maybe do hot tea with sugar. No, but I don't know. I don't do it. I mean, that's they do it over there.
I get so much shit for this.
Everything's just so floral. Like, why do you want to drink flowers? Anyway, it makes, I don't understand tea.
I've tried it. I've done my best because everybody talks like raves about it from like a health standpoint. It's great for, you know, when you're sick and healing and water. I just, it's so disgusting. Like, I just, yeah, sorry.
Just inject me with coffee. I'm good.
Chinese tea.
Yeah, we're going to get a lot of hate. Are you saying? I look forward to it. Thank you, Rachel. I have to say,
we're getting off to a rip-roaring like start this season.
On Twitter or like on Apple News or whatever, you see the articles about all the dumb stuff that Americans do that the British hate. And those, I find, like the list, the top 40 or whatever, are absolutely hilarious. Because, I mean, I find most of them annoying as well. But some of them, I'm like, really? I had no idea that pissed people off, so I'll just keep doing it. But good times.
Am I going next?
Yeah.
All right. Next question. Right, T Golf says, why is Liberty Media owners of F1 getting a pass on all the crazy changes? Cost cap, sprint race, Massey directive from Liberty Media. I guess, first of all, what are we thinking that getting a pass means? A pass from fans? I mean, Liberty Media kind of runs the ship, so it's not like they're reporting to anybody else.
I think, like,
yeah, I mean, it's more like, to me, like, they decide where we go racing. They decide what teams are going to be in it. You know, they're the commercial rights holder. They decide kind of how it's brought to you, what networks are going to give it to you, what streaming platform they're going to use. That's Liberty Media. You know, in terms of like the cost caps and the sprint races, those were inventions of the teams. So there's a lot of team governance in F1 now. There's a lot of people, I know Zach Brown, we didn't cover this in the news, but issued this basically like 3-4 page manifesto kind of about everything he thought was wrong with the sport. And you can check that out on the McLaren site. And maybe next time we're, you know, doing a show, we'll talk about it. But yeah, I mean, that's a lot of this is stuff that the teams
I don't
have come
think
with.
That it's stuff that the teams have come up with, though, right? I mean, they do the final say in agreement, but that's not.
Well, that's the, and then, well, the FIA rubber stamps the rules. So, I mean, the cost cap is an FIA, was a joint venture between the teams, the FIA and Liberty. Sprint races were a Liberty idea that the teams said okay to. Massey directives from Liberty Media. That,
jury's out on that one.
Yeah, I don't know that I believe in that. Yeah.
Not going there.
I hinted that I do have a conspiracy theory. At one point, I will actually put on a thing of tinfoil and tell you my conspiracy theory about what I think happened in Abu Dhabi. But this is not going
to
be that.
I look forward to that.
Tune in a later time.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I agree with you, Andy. I feel like, you know, they're doing TV deals. They're doing signing, you know, where we're going, you know, the broadcast, right? Again, F1 TV and all that comes with that. I feel like what happened at Abu Dhabi, I'm assuming that this is probably what most of this question has been based off of. Like, again, they're not associated with the actual rules. You know, it's trying to think of like an American analogy, American sports analogy.
Well, it's like Fox doesn't actually tell the umpires.
That would be more of a Sky comparison.
You know, in baseball.
You know, again, they're like you said, Andy. I think you said it best. Is they're the ones that are all about how it's brought to us and all the content, and you know, they probably have something to do with the graphics and the AWS stuff and how it's presented to us. And again, they're all about trying to get that new fan engagement and everything that comes with it, all the pre-shows and everything else. Probably most of that is about, you know, from their hand. Because it's all about making money and bringing new fans and, again, you know, keeping that cycle rolling. But the sporting regs, while maybe they have, you know, I'm sure there's some part of them that are, you know, are brought into some conversation, but they really have nothing to do with the sporting regs and what happens as a whole. So,
And one of the things that they've just done, and this actually sparked a lot of, you know, rumors about the future of one Michael Massey, was there was the, you know, if you were on Twitter in the course of the last couple of weeks, you probably saw a screenshot of like the FIA ownership or structure and who governed what. And suddenly Michael Massey's name wasn't there. A lot of that was stuff that was already planned because there was kind of becoming this lack of clarity between who was really Liberty Media, who was the FIA, and who was, representatives of the teams. So a lot of that rejiggering of roles and stuff at the FIA level is to make it, you know, these people are all FIA. They have nothing to do with Liberty. These people are Liberty. They have nothing to do with the FIA. So, as of right now, Michael Massey's still in his job. Whether or not we see him in March is another story, but that's something we'll just
have to watch. Good question there, because I think there is a lot of confusion about what Liberty Media actually does and what kind of influence they have over the sport versus the FIA. So they're definitely much more of a forward facing organization as opposed to the FIA that runs somewhat in the shadows sometimes, but. So next question we had, Dave Doherty, appreciate it. Always sending in some good stuff. He asked our expectations on liveries for 2022 and the cars. Andy, obviously I know you're most excited about McLaren, but outside of that, is there a team that you're,
I assume it will be papaya in some shade, papaya and gray in some shade or form of another. In terms of other liveries, the more interesting one, we were just kind of texting about it earlier this afternoon, was now what if the Otmar to Alpine rumor and the BWT to Alpine rumor is true, what does that car end up looking like? Because I actually really, the blue actually grew on me over the course of the season. I hope that whatever you design, if you're going to work in the pink, that's fine. Just do it, make it classy, because the blue, I think itself,
I feel like it's going to look like bubblegum, but.
Yeah,
of some sort.
It is a fun when you're dealing with pink and really any other dark color. I feel like it's a fine line between how much pink and the bubblegum effect is definitely. I've already seen concepts on the line that look exactly like that. I've also seen a couple of them that looked pretty badass. It just had some trim work that was in pink, just enough to pop, and so you could still easily see the pink. But that'll be interesting. For me, I guess looking forward to hopefully maybe a silver Mercedes. I think that's where I get that. Yep, obviously, we mentioned the Aston Martin one. I'm stoked about that. I know that Lawrence early on in the season said that he wasn't happy with the shade of green and how it presented on TV, like we mentioned earlier. So again, lime green, hoping we get some of that. I also hope that they revert back on the AlphaTauri livery. I thought the one from 2 years ago was in like one of the best I've ever seen, that stormtrooper look.
The white over the blue,
and I'm not crazy about the inverse that we did this past year, so I hope that kind of goes back in its original form in some form or fashion. But I mean, with the new cars, new wings, everything else, I mean, it's gonna be interesting to see how the design language looks and how they apply these liveries across what should be a fairly very different looking type of car. So good question, Dave.
Yeah, and that's what, to me, that always was what makes the launches interesting, is I look for more just that more than anything. You see these beautiful renderings, and I keep saying somebody should hire Sean Bull Design and just bring him in, because he's one of the best out there.
One of them does work for Alpine.
I don't think it's Sean. I could be wrong.
I'll try to figure it out. Hold on.
There's a couple of them out there that would produce incredible stuff that just makes me. You see the Ford liveries, and we've seen the Porsches and the Audi ones for a long time, and I'm just
Sean Bull Designs for Alpine.
Oh, nice. Okay,
so good faith,
and why the blue grew on me.
Hope. Maybe there's hope.
Good. There is hope. Then I do have hope. All right. So our next question, and I apologize if I'm butchering this name. I'm squinting trying to read it. Adida, I hope that's right, asks, will George Russell push Lewis Hamilton like Nico Rosberg did? I think that's, of course, assuming that Lewis Hamilton will be back in the car in 2022. I personally think he will be. And I think that that's going to be a huge question going into this season, is how much George Russell is going to be able to push Hamilton. Because he doesn't have the known quantity in Valtteri anymore. It's a bit of an unknown quantity. So we're going to find out, and we're going to find out what George Russell really has, because he can't complain anymore about not having a good car, because he's got everything in front of him to make a championship push this year. We'll see if he does it.
Yeah. I've always been really high on Russell, so I have a feeling – this at least minimum first half of this year, Russell will very much be playing the team game as he was kind of signed up to do. He knows that he is the future of that team. Maybe not the one tomorrow, but like winner of next year. But I think once he kind of starts getting a taste of winning races, and if he is able to push Hamilton, I think that's when that relationship is going to start to sour. And I feel like that could be as soon as kind of towards the end of next year or going into 2023.
Yeah.
I don't think this one ends amicably.
Yeah, I agree. I think he knows his responsibility for 22. Assuming Hamilton comes back, I mean, that's obviously the big kicker there. If by some chance Hamilton doesn't, then yeah, it's all gloves are off and fight it out. But I think he knows, and I'm sure that he's had some pretty deep conversations with Toto and team, that your job is to beat Checo Perez every week. And like we said all throughout the last season, we need to have two in the chamber. We need to have, you know, we need to show up with two weapons at every race. We can't have a guy that's starting, you know, P6 and finishing P6. That can't happen. So we need to have the strategy options there, and to be able to use them appropriately, knowing that, you know, Hamilton, you know, potentially if he comes back, I know he's got what, two more years, I think, on that deal. But you know, there's nothing to say that he'll finish out those 2 years if he doesn't want to. So, I think it's in George's best interest to support Hamilton as much as possible, you know, try to get him in eighth, and, you know, who knows, maybe Lewis rides into the sunset and George takes over as the main guy. So I think it's in his best interest to keep that amicable as long as possible, at least throughout this first season. Deanna, you got the next one?
I think so. The formula asks, what team do you think is a possible dark horse going into 2022? And we'll save the second bit for a second. Andy?
Well, going into it, I would have said Alpine, but given all of the changes at the top, when you have all those types of changes, it's really hard to make it all coalesce really, really quickly. So I'm going to go with Aston Martin, just because I think they just missed the mark so bad. And they've put so much money into that car, you know, into the team and the infrastructure and all that. Now is the time to actually reap the benefit of it. So I know they've got some changeover too, but I think Aston Martin is probably the one that poised to make a run, you know, maybe a top five, top four, you know, if they can pull off P4 in the constructors, that's really good for them.
I'm going to jump in and also agree with Aston Martin here. And I think Daddy Stroll has like been pumping a bunch of money into this. They've made some big hires over the past couple of years, and I think this is the point where we'll start to see them reap that benefit. And I mean, last year was a disaster because of the rule change, but that was not a car that they were expecting to keep. They did kind of the 2020 patchwork, copying the Mercedes. And I think that they thought that design philosophy that they weren't really super comfortable with was only going to last them a year, and it did its job there. But then having to carry that over for 21 as well, I don't think went it well. It did not go very well for them overall. So I think when we kind of go back to Aston Martin, that team kind of coming up with a philosophy on their own, plus all the investment that Stroll's put in there, I think that's a good spot, even with the kind of fluctuating circumstance of their team principal.
Yeah, I'll jump on that bandwagon as well. And I think the kicker is, one, you mentioned the amount of money that's being put in the investment and, you know, in the factory and everything else. But two, you know, their 2021 season was pretty much done from the beginning. You know, it was very evident from the very get-go that this car was going to suck. So they really had no incentive to spend a whole lot of money or development or anything else on that car. You know, it's not like they were fighting for P3 in the constructors and still having to push all the way through to make sure they try to secure that. You know, it was pretty much game over. They knew, listen, we can beat a couple of teams that just suck. We'll kind of settle in here. And I think they've had, you know, an ample amount of time to then revert their attention to this new car. So now if they come out bad, then that's, I feel like that's on them, but they have no reason to not come out and look pretty good this coming year.
Okay. And then the second part of this question is, what team will have the closest points margin between their two drivers at the end of 2022?
Ferrari.
All right.
I actually tend to agree with that. I think those two are going to be, they were very close last year. They're going to put their team principal, they're going to put Mattia in a bit of a hot seat. They're going to have to pick which one they want to support. So I will agree.
If they can not hit each other, that's going to be the kicker, because I feel like it was coming to an head at the end of the season. So
I was going to say my cheap answer was going to be Haas and that they both don't score points and then there's no difference between
Deanna's
them.
Deanna's always wagering her bets over there.
Yes. So, I mean, I feel like I honestly hope at least Mick scores points for the sake of that team for after doing absolutely nothing to their 21 car.
Yeah.
Hopefully they can at least score a point. And so let's say I'll stick with Haas, say Schumacher scores a point.
1-0.
And Mazepin does not. Yes. We'll roll with that.
I love it.
Do they need rain in which to score that point, do you think?
Probably.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. See, I would think they're actually going to get – I think they will score points this year, and I think that they will not necessarily need it because – I think they've been working on that car for a long enough time. They better screw this one up. I mean, you really gotta question your existence.
Yeah, it's kind of harsh, but that was my easy answer for that one. So.
Fair enough. Let's see.
All right.
I'll take this. Widget asks. Let's see. Do you believe F1 cars will ever get smaller and or lighter, and how might that impact the quality of racing? So I actually saw something, a comparison this week, actually, of just how heavy these things have gotten. And obviously, we went even heavier in this coming year. But, Deanna, what do you think about, will we ever go the opposite direction?
Yes. Well, because Lewis made the point at one point that it's kind of goes in the face of the sustainable initiative, because the heavier the cars are, the more fuel you have to use. So I think that's kind of one thing that I think as this sustainable stuff kind of comes more to the forefront, hopefully more and more each year, that will be kind of one of the areas that they can tackle, is to take some of the weight out of the cars. But some of the drivers at the time mentioned that the cars would be a lot easier to handle, making driving, like racing, a lot more aggressive, could probably get a lot more out of the tires and be more aggressive with the tires. You wouldn't have as much life being taken out of it just with the weight of the car. And then you have places like Monaco where that track is so narrow, the cars are so wide, you can't pass. We saw with something like Formula E with those cars that they were actually able to race there. So I think, especially as they push more and more for what, like the actual racing product with like these regulations, hopefully they continue that in the next kind of new rule sets. And one of the things that we get is smaller cars.
Yeah, we're like essentially 200 kilograms. Is that kilograms? I don't know. I mix up my metrics there. Yeah. Whatever that is. heavier than we were in like 2008. And to me, like and granted, I'm biased because that's when I started coming into sport, was during that era of the mid 2000s. But I always go back and I love that racing pre-DRS. Like, it was always a favorite for me. So, yeah, I agree. I think, again, lighter is obviously would be better, but smaller, like you mentioned, the Monaco effect, I think would be huge, to see, some three wide racing in some of these tracks and be able to actually do an overtake in Monaco would be, smaller, not the size of a Ford F-150 trying to race around Monaco. So, yeah, I would love to see that.
Yeah, I mean, I do think that they will eventually. F1 is a boomerang. They tinker, they go down one way, and then they stick with it for a while, and then they will, try a different direction at another time. And I do think, I think what Deanna said about sustainability is very, very true. Because at some point you're only, if you keep making them heavier, you're just going to keep burning more either electricity or fuel, whatever that is. And I wouldn't mind seeing a less wide car simply because I would like to see, passes in Monaco. And you've got enough tracks that are Monaco-esque. I mean, we don't know what Miami's going to bring. So that could be one where a less wide car would be more beneficial. I can guarantee it's going to be more beneficial in Saudi Arabia. We've seen what that was. So we know that would help. And then you've got Monaco
Imola's
and a couple other places.
Tight.
Yeah.
Imola, exactly. Yeah. I mean, exactly. So yeah, there's going to come a point at which I don't think you're going to see these cars get any wider. And I hope that, as we get more efficient with this new package,
we
get more narrow.
God, imagine if they got wider. It would literally, they just get stuck in between the barriers in Monaco.
I know Ross Brawn, it was only a few months ago, essentially confirmed that there was some heavy talks about maybe sometime around the new engine package, or that there would be a push for smaller and lighter cars to go in correlation, maybe not right at 26, but maybe somewhere within the immediate years following that. So yeah, I'm glad it's being talked about, because I agree. I think it would be substantial for the racing. Let's see. And you got the next one?
All right. Yep. So this one comes from Big Bad Bill. And he asks, which F1 era looks the best and which one looks the worst? I guess I'll go first on this one. I think the ones that look the best are the cars. I even tweeted out a picture of one of my favorite cars ever, which was like Mika Häkkinen's 97 McLaren, just because it's just a meat and potatoes car. There's no fancy aero bits. It's all just right there, and it just looks cool and looks badass. So that, I think, era of aero, you know, there was enough aero to make the car go really fast, but not too much aero to where it was crazy. I think that was kind of my nice mix. So I would say late 90s, early 2000s. In terms of the one that I thought looked the worst, the ones with the devil horns coming out of there, around the helmets, those cars look pretty ridiculous in the mid 2000s. So that's what I'll say.
What year did we get like the elephant trunks and the horns up front? Was that 2014?
14 with the,
it was like,
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. 2014. Yeah. That was pretty bad.
Oh, it's brutal.
The ugly noses of 2014.
Best for me, I kind of alluded to a minute ago. I still love like that 2007-8 range, somewhere in there. Like, I still think the 2007 Ferrari is still, in my opinion, like one of the best looking cars ever. I love the McLaren. I don't know. There was something about the aero bits and the way that they applied the livery in that part, and they were smaller cars. It's just a lot that I loved about that. Worst, so I don't want to throw the whole decade in, because there were certainly some very good looking cars in the 70s, but there was also some really hideous cars in the 70s. Ooh, well. Yeah. Like with everything else, you know, a lot of experimental things going on in the 60s and 70s across all of society, and F1 was certainly not immune to that. So I'm interested to see Deanna's, our historian over there.
A little bit of a stretch, but so for best, it's a tie for me. I think between the early 60s, like Jim Clark, I think it's like the Lotus 25 or whatever, and he had in 63. Like, I kind of like those very simple, like in the Ferraris in that time, pre all of the aero stuff that we got later. And then my tie is early 90s, like Jordan 191, Ferrari, like I think it's like 641, something like that. Like all of those, the nose that kind of curved, love that. I think that's beautiful. Those are great. Things that were not great, definitely late 70s, early 80s. The ugliest car of all time, in my personal opinion, the inside N179. It's the car that has literally looks like a ladder on all the nose. Steps, like,
yeah.
A literal, yes. Just about the ugliest thing I've ever seen in my life. Also, 2014 gets an honorable mention.
Yeah, definitely.
And there's definitely more that I just forgot about, but yeah, those are some rough ones out there.
Imagine I'm trying to remember like who was some of the worst. Like, was it Caterham or something like that that had hideous?
Yeah.
Like, imagine showing up in 2014 at preseason testing, and you see like what Mercedes and you know everyone else is doing, and then you show up with this thing.
Is what we came up.
And you're like, oh, we've done. Like, this. We might actually have some of those moments in a couple of in a month or so.
Yeah,
there might be a team out
like
there that's
cars...
Oh, we fucked up.
I don't think they'll look bad. They may be slow. They may not work the way that they're expecting to. But I don't know that they're going to look, other than the front wing, I think, looking too much like a mustache.
Yeah. Both the wings. The rear wing's very, very curvy. And I'm still yet to, like, get a good visualization on how DRS is actually going to work on that rear wing.
Yeah. Well,
I'm still waiting for that one.
You know, they keep saying that, like, they expect the cars to look very different than what we've seen so far. That, I've seen that, you know, they already think that they're going to be within a second of last year's car right off the gate, even though they predicted to be 14 seconds slower and then eclipse last year's car by maybe mid-season. being that, you know, engineers doing engineer things, which actually might be a bad thing because it might mean it's going to probably create dirty air and bad racing potentially. So hopefully not. But I mean, I'm still thinking that we may see a couple of weird surprises when we finally get our first glimpses of these things, you know, at that second test. So who knows?
Or even not even in testing. Maybe there may be people holding stuff back.
That's true. We might get an FP2 surprise.
Relying on their CFD stuff.
Good one.
It will be interesting.
Let's see. I think I've got the next one. So Regan Stanzik, supporter of the show. Appreciate that. I had to look this one up, and James had to help me on this one. But it says, when referring to Crocs, sport mode or no?
I'm trying to remember my Croc days, what I used to do. When I was in middle school, I had these bright orange Crocs. I was obsessed with the color orange. It was not a good phase. But I don't remember how I wore them. I feel not sport mode, I feel like, was what I was inclined
to
do.
So wait, not sport mode is when you've got it behind the ankle, right?
Sport mode is behind the ankle, yes. So then the version where it is up, I think that's what I did.
Oh, okay. I had it backwards. Okay. I have never worn Crocs, but my daughter likes Crocs, and I just got her some sparkly purple ones to replace the ones that she's tore up. I assume that based on hers, she would go non-sport. She has up front, whatever that is. I'm very confused by this whole thing. I literally had to get James to send me a Google diagram.
Yeah, I was going to say, we had to get a diagram with arrows. Me being the oldest one here, I have never worn a Croc.
I'm not much younger than you, Andy, so.
No, but even so, I mean, I've never worn them. If I would tell you what I wore as a kid, I would really, really be dating myself because I don't even know that they make these anymore. They were a laceless shoe, and I think it was my parents referred to them as boat shoes. I have no idea
like
if they even
Sperry?
Still exist anymore. I don't know, but they were like slip-ons. They were like these slip-on shoes with like a hard sole. It covered your foot. You didn't have to wear socks with them. That was what I would use them for.
Boat shoe.
Sound like
going out, take out the trash. So I'd slip on. Yeah, it might be. But I mean, that's what we called them in our house. Yeah. Yeah. So, never worn a Croc or a pair of Crocs. So I would assume I would probably not be sport mode because I would assume that would probably annoy my ankle if I tried.
I don't remember the brands. I only wore like, what's the skating shoes that everybody wore back in the day?
Vans.
I didn't wear Vans, but it was one of the Vans competitors. Yeah,
you know what I always wanted that I never had? Heelys.
What the hell is a Heely?
You just kind of roll around.
All those things.
They have the ones with
the rollerblade in it. Yeah.
One of those, but
I did have a pair of shoes that lit up.
Yeah,
in the
I had one of those.
I had light up shoes when I was.
I think the Heelys. Yep. I think that missed Andy and I's generation. I think.
Yeah.
You know, we were the ones like. Watch
it's a little too advanced guys
watching to see if you fall down or not. We were that generation, like, oh, there they go. Yep. Someone's getting ready to get hurt. There's a broken bone coming. Whoever thought that was a great idea, I don't know. It's a miracle that half of us survived our childhoods, honestly, but especially you, Deanna. I mean, god dang.
I really did not get injured until I turned like 23. Like, I did so well for myself for so long, considering all the dumb stuff that I did.
Could you imagine seeing Deanna, like, strolling through Manhattan on her Heelys? That would be a sight to see.
Great time.
You should put that on YouTube.
I'll trip over a subway grate and fall into, like, a manhole cover or something.
There's a giant rat chasing you down or something, you know.
But that's what I need. If there's rats, I need to get away, like, a quick getaway on my Heelys. You're going to see.
Oh, God. I can't wait to see. I mean, that's a viral hit right there, so.
I'm going to be able to get places so much quicker. And it's not motorized, like, scooter situation. So, like, I feel like we're in a better spot. Anywho.
You know, first.
The next question.
Thank you, Regan, because it took our show in a whole different direction here. We learned so much about ourselves.
Okay. Okay. Yang talking smack. What? Okay. Ask.
Yeah, right. That's him.
What are your dream driver combos, and at what team do you think those pairings thrive the most? I guess,
like,
I don't know if this is in history, I'm just going to go with the current grid because that's easy. And I think after last year, Lando doing so much better, bringing back Carlos Sainz, put him back in McLaren, and the two work together so well, the team has been doing vastly better over the past few years. I think it'd be great. I'd like, let's just get a little reunion going. Anyway.
It'd definitely be fun for their YouTube channel to see those two together again. Oh, gosh. I mean, I would say I'll go a little bit different because I think young and old I think is good. I would like to pair, if it's real, if the Fernando is real, I would love to have like Lando and Fernando be together again. Or you know, to actually be able to mentor one to the other because they would work well for each other, I think would be a pretty cool pairing. And you can put them in any car that you want. I mean, I would naturally put them in a McLaren just because I'm a big
fan. Maybe not any car.
I mean, you can put them in any car. There. Well, maybe not the Haas one, but, you know, but put them. Yeah, I mean, put them in one of the top four cars and see what they could do together.
I like it.
That's a good one. This is a tough question. Like the first one I thought of was like a Hamilton Vettel pairing. Like where Vettel knows his place and is a support role. But then when I was thinking about Vettel, I'm like, anyone with like Mark Webber, I feel like Mark Webber was like a badass number two. I know he didn't always want to be a number two, but I mean, he pushed Vettel heavily through those years and did phenomenal for that team. And you know, had he been with anyone else, probably would be world champion. So yeah, I don't have a team. Maybe like a Hamilton Vettel at Williams. I'm getting crazy now.
Okay.
Sticking to my water, but sorry, I'm not drunk.
All right, next question. I'll take this one. Josh Wilson asks, one for the Ask Anything podcast. This one was aimed at specifically James. Who do you think will be more successful when Schumacher joins Sainz at Ferrari? He did respond. John, do you have his text?
I do. He said, as for the Ferrari question, for that to happen, it would mean that Sainz wiped the floor with Leclerc, so young Mick won't stand a chance. So... again, James is not thinking this is a viable option. I totally think it is a viable option. You know, Binotto said these guys are coming in as equal drivers this year, so you know, take away the team politics aside, we'll see with that. But yeah, James is not thinking this is going to be a plausible option, but I guess if it were, he would definitely go science on that one.
Yeah, I know I've not agreed with your train of thought in recent years. About the Sainz staying at Ferrari and Schumacher coming. But Sainz, I think at the end of the season, we'll see kind of going into next season as well. If like that consistency continues, if he's able to build upon that and keep pushing Leclerc throughout the season, I think Ferrari's going to have a real headache because they want Schumacher in that position, in that seat. But I think any day of the week, I would take Leclerc and Sainz over Schumacher for the foreseeable future.
As of right now, absolutely.
So I don't know what they do. I don't know if marketing wins out on that one or if Mick does get a better car in Haas if he's able to now prove what he can do in the long run. But that's just – it's such a good pair having the two of them in there. I mean, it might get a little questionable here. Hopefully not. But, I don't know.
I mean, if by some chance they hit the mark and they're coming out and Deanna's predictions, her way too early predictions are right on, there's going to be chaos on that team, I think, because Binotto, we talked about that, is not a strong leader at all and doesn't know how to, you know, divide or keep people separated and keep the mission on track. And if those two are fighting for a world championship by chance, then you're going to see a Hamilton Rosberg, I think, times 10, because that was a brutal situation. And that happened with a Toto, with a Niki Lauda, you know, stepping in and cooling heads down and, you know, and keeping somewhat the team on track. I don't know if Binotto is going to be the guy that does that. And if those two are fighting 1-2 in the championship, oh, that could be a spicy season. So, yeah.
I mean, when I've actually tried to sit down and think about, you know, how do we maybe even get to that point? It only happens if Leclerc is proved to be not viable as a candidate for a world championship. That's the only path there. I think, you know, Sainz has got to show, number one, that he can actually win a race or two, because he hasn't done that yet. So once that happens, let's say that happens this year, that certainly kicks up the pressure on Leclerc. And then how does he respond? And the other thing that Ferrari can do with Schumacher is they are perfectly happy to maybe move him to Alfa Romeo or keep him at Haas for another couple of years. They do have time on their side. If Sainz can continue to up the pressure, it does make that decision a lot more spicy. But I do think then what I would think Ferrari is going to do is just defer that situation as long as humanly possible until either Sainz's contract runs out or one of the two of them proves not to be viable. So
that's next one we have is Mary asks, what's your daily driver? So
my feet.
Yes, the New Yorker over there. Well, when you're back home, seeing the parents in North Carolina.
So it's technically my name, but my dad drives it. I have a Hyundai Sonata. Yep. And they just bought a Tucson.
Oh, so you're a Hyundai family.
We're all Hyundai family. Wow, yeah.
Nice. Andy, I know yours, but.
I have a 2016 Dodge Charger that I scooted everybody around when we were in St. Louis together. So you've all seen that. It does have a Hemi. It can go really fast. It does not have good gas mileage. I tell this story when we were coming back from the first night when we were at when John and Chris, who was with us, we all went to a Cardinals game. I went to hit sport mode, which is make the car go really fast. And I was going up a hill. And that's like the first time I've ever had like six people or five people in that car. I'm literally watching my mileage drop as I'm going up this hill. Like it's literally going, you have, you know, 204 miles, 3, 2, 1, we get to the top, we have 199 left. I'm like, holy crap, this car really does suck up gas. Because when it's just me, it's fine. You know, it doesn't bother me. I get like my 18, 20 miles to the gallon and I'm good. But when it's full and you're pushing it, it destroys the gas mileage for sure. And it also doesn't like the winter.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So this time of the year is a little bit dangerous. Rear-wheel drive cars, you have to learn how to drive them.
I'm on the opposite end of the spectrum of Andy. I drive a Tesla Model 3 all-wheel drive, dual motor all-wheel drive. So I handle great, and I get great mileage, Andy. We'll have to get you over. And 0-60 is I might be able to keep up with you for a little while. So we'll have to see if we can get Andy on the EV train. So I don't know if I'm a petrol head, but I don't know if I'll ever go back to a petrol car. We'll see. Unless it's like a weekend fun car, like a Porsche or something like that for the weekends. Yeah for definitely second a second car then, but probably for my daily then. Driver, I don't think I'll ever go back.
Now I would also say when I bought my car, in my defense, I was taking the train downtown 5 days a week. Yep. It was basically my weekend car. Life and COVID and everything else has shifted that. And now this is my car all the time. So I'm in it a lot more than I ever thought I would be. But I mean, it's a fun car to drive. I do have the button where I say car next to me, go bye-bye. And I hit that and I just, you know, go down the highway.
Yours sounds better than mine. I'll give you that for sure.
Next question.
Andy, you got the next one or Deanne? I don't remember who we're at.
I think it's me.
No, I got it.
Go ahead. What's the number one thing Peter on Poll asks, what's the number one thing you are looking forward to most in the 2022 season? Anyone want to take that?
The cars? Yeah. I'll just say the cars. I mean, that I just want to see the new designs of the cars. I think that's my favorite part. You know, and then seeing them actually run.
I'll go with the, hopefully, knock on wood, the return to Singapore. Because I had missed that track.
I think the Hamilton Russell, or how well Russell does coming into that car. I'm also excited for, like, well, A, yes, the cars, if the racing's closer. The Australia revamp, I think I'm also hopeful that that one's a lot better, too, as well. Anyway.
It feels like a long time since we talked about that.
I know. It's been a long time since we've been in Australia.
In Australia.
It did go well last time.
No, it did not.
So we will take a quick break. We will come on back and we will get into the rest of our questions. These are all going to be ones that are coming from YouTube. So stand by and we'll get into those. So come on back. All right. Welcome back to the Outlap F1 podcast. It's our Ask Us Anything episode. And we're now going to get into our questions that have come specifically from YouTube. Deanna, we're probably going to do these in rapid fire mode. So fire away and we shall answer as we can.
All right. So starting off, how often do you see F1 fans in public? Start with Andy.
More than I used to. And it's kind of surprising. You never ever know where you're going to run into one. But when I find one, I tend to introduce myself, introduce the podcast, and try to get a new listener.
Yeah. When I was first getting into F1, literally never, ever, ever, ever. And now I'd say it's weird. It's like probably a couple times a month. I tend to wear a lot of F1 hats and that helps. So yeah, same thing. If I see a Red Bull hat across the store, I sprint in that direction and make friends very quickly because you can never have too many F1 friends.
Yeah, I definitely see more now. I feel like I see more merch when I go to other cities though. I'm not sure. It's something about New York. Maybe it's not quite as big. Or I'm just not paying attention when I'm walking around, but that's also probably part of it. But yeah, definitely more than just a couple years ago for sure. Okay, so next question, kind of building off of that. How big is F1 in America now compared to when you started watching? Is it growing rapidly?
Yeah, John? Yeah, no, 100%. It's massive. Like I said, when I first got into it in 2007, I knew virtually no one who even heard of Formula One. And now, thanks to Drive Survive and some good seasons. Yeah, I mean, I literally run into people at least a couple of times a month for sure. There's now watch parties in most cities. Chicago's got a watch party. I know here in Charlotte, we've got a watch party groups going on. It's pretty damn cool to see, you know, big sports or towns, you know, that are normally, you know, all about the Bears or whatever, or the Giants, the Jets in New York, whatever, are now, you know, people are starting to get into F1. It's pretty damn cool. Does anyone cheer for the Jets? I guess. I like a good underdog. I'm a Sox fan. What can I say?
You come to the right place if you're rooting for those poor guys. Maybe Zach Wilson's the answer. Who knows? Yeah, I mean, much bigger now than when I first started watching. When I first started watching, I figured I was the only one that knew it was on. Let's just put it this way. I think my first couple years of watching it, I was watching, I think, a year behind or a week behind on tape delay, because I don't think I was ever watching the races actually live, because that's the only time that they would be on. So that's, you know, from to there to now, it was interesting. Mainstream sports talk radio here in Chicago, one of our legacy stations, was talking about something, and F1 came up, and the one host exclaimed, "Everybody watched F1 in Abu Dhabi." And I went, just to hear something like that on mainstream sports talk radio,
never in a million
years.
Thought
I would hear. Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I think for me, while I don't see that many F1 fans out and about, compared to 2 years ago, the amount of people that just know what it is has grown exponentially. Like, I think if I would have asked most of my friends a couple years ago, nobody would have known what F1 was. But now they all do, largely because of the Netflix series. So it's just to get the name out there and the recognition and people just understanding that this is a thing that exists, not completely like going into being a full-fledged fan, which hopefully those people will get there. But I think it's just kind of being in the general vernacular. I think that's been really cool to see that grow rapidly.
Even as
here,
recent as 2019, when I was in an office setting, I had a enormous calendar that was, you know, like every month had a different F1 car on there. I had like up on my cube wall, pretty much is just a starting talking point to talk about F1 for anyone who was curious about it. And, you know, to see it go from people saying, what the heck is that? Is that an IndyCar? You know, occasionally you at least get some kind of tie to it. being semi-close to Indianapolis. But yeah, to see from that to what it is now is just, it's mind-blowing. So,
and we're also getting to the point where there's people know that there's a difference between NASCAR and F1. It's not just all cars.
They don't all go in circles and they'll all just turn left. So we've progressed pretty substantially in the last couple of years in the States.
Making strides. All right, next up. Is a hot dog a sandwich?
I'm going to have to defer to Andy on this one.
Yes, it's a sandwich. It's just a different type of sandwich. It's meat and accoutrement inside of bread. Therefore, it's a sandwich. If an Italian beef is a sandwich, a hot dog is a sandwich.
I don't know why, but Italian beef is a sandwich to me, but a hot dog, I can't wrap my head around that being a sandwich. I don't know.
Yeah, I got to go with no because it's the wrong orientation. A sandwich goes this way, but a hot dog's like
but,
this.
But I'm with you on the Italian beef, like you which has the same orientation. But
oh, I don't even know what Italian beef is.
Andy, we have so much work to do.
Oh, it's a good thing you're not Chicago, Deanna. I think half the city would have rebelled by now. You don't know a hot dog. You don't know an Italian beef. No, you know of a hot dog, but you don't know of a Chicago style hot dog, which of course in this town is just insane and its own unique thing.
Getting started on her idea of good pizza over there, so that's how this whole.
It's not deep dish. God no.
Got started with the.
Now that's the one. That's the one thing that I actually don't defend in Chicago.
No, I'm actually a more of a thin slice Chicago, but you know, I'm more of the not a New York thin.
Thin
not
slice.
A New York thin. No, that's a whole different. There, you got to get once you get out of tourist town in Chicago. There is some neighborhood places that make a thinner style crust that is phenomenal, and it's not.
Thinner style is probably still 3 inches thick.
It's not lasagna style.
No, actually, it's not. I mean, it depends. You got to look for them. You do have to look for them. But once you find a good neighborhood spot that does good pizza, you treasure that because the chains don't do us justice.
So they're just doing New York style pizza in Chicago.
It's thicker than New York style and much better, honestly.
I don't know. I've actually never had true.
It doesn't
style
flop
pizza, so
over, don't have to like fold it up into like a. I don't even know.
Well, I don't know what you're eating. Get halfway decent pizza. That's normal.
Hey, I have family in Long Island. I mean, it tastes good. Eat but better it's pizza. Floppy is all get out. I'm just saying. It's something to do with the
you're
dirty
going to the
water
wrong place. Jesus. I think they have the best water filtration system in the country.
Listen, I'm more referring to the dirty water dogs, you know, the classic.
Oh, well, you drink out of the Hudson, then. There you go. There's some dirty water for you. Okay, anyway, moving on. What is your favorite livery? Anyone else want to take this?
Of all time. The Chrome McLaren liveries from the early or the late 2000s.
Yeah, I like that one. I like the Marlboro McLarens. I'll take that as well.
Yeah. I was about to say that. I don't know. My opinion on liveries changes all the time, but like the Jordan 191, like that's just such a basic one, but it is, I think it's just like the car itself, it's like very beautiful, but we'll go with the Marlboro McLarens.
Like it. Nice.
Anyway, best non-motorsporting sporting event you've attended? John?
That's a tough one. Bears Packers when we actually won a game, that was a nice a couple of ACC championships. Those are fun. Seeing my boys occasionally win that over your Dukies. Probably the best one just from a sentimental standpoint. My dad and I were invited at a Sox game. We were there very, very early, and we were in the concourse. And we were found to be the fans of the game and brought into the suites behind home plate. And that time I was 800 miles away from my dad, only saw him a couple times a year. So that was a very special father son moment, to be in the suites. And, you know, neither one of us ever had opportunities like that growing up. So I think it was cool for him and cool for me. So I'll go with that one as a sentimental one.
Nice. Andy.
Let's see how far back do I really want to go? One would be, and these are probably tied, one would be the 2005 playoff baseball game for the White Sox, where Tadahito Iguchi hit a grand slam and that was the loudest I've ever heard a baseball stadium. And then if I want to go in the way, way back machine, Michael Jordan's last year, I got to see the first playoff game. They actually chronicled it in The Last Dance. And I was going, I was there for this game, the game that against the Nets that went into overtime. And Jordan had one epic dunk to finally finish him off in 1997. So those were, I think, one and one.
Oh, that's cool. Mine happened this past November, and it was Duke beating Kentucky in Coach K's final game at the Garden. Fantastic moment.
I feel like most of the events I go to are around sporting, around motorsports. Even my vacations, you know, pre-pandemic were all like, where's an F1 race? All right, let's go there. Let's spend a week and go to an F1 race. So, yeah, I guess I need to branch out a little bit more. But
yeah, that's been most of my vacations in the past few months. It's just going to different races. Okay, well, kind of on moving on to that, how do the IndyCar versus F1 in-person fan experience differ? Which is more worth it for the money? Andy.
I would answer that by saying, what are you going for? If you're going to be closer to the drivers and more access to everything, IndyCar is by far going to be easier, by far more worth it for your bang for your buck. You're definitely going to get it that way. If you're going for the experience of being involved in an F1 big event, and that's something you kind of have to figure out. Is that worth the money? I sometimes question every year when I get the bill, is this going to be worth it to do it one more time? Now that I've done it enough times to know exactly, I'm probably not going to get anything new out of it. So yeah, I mean, it's really a kind of personal preference. But yeah, if you're coming into it and want to get your feet wet, go to an IndyCar race. Absolutely.
I'll just Sean? Echo 100% of what Andy said. I agree.
Yeah, I agree. And in the two races that we went to versus the F1 race, I did very much enjoy the IndyCar more, I think, as a whole. Also because they were like, especially Nashville was like a great environment, but you weren't being suffocated by the amount of people that were there. Coda was just, it was a bit stressful. Well, a lot of people.
Too, like, you know, at an IndyCar race, you're primarily going to have an American audience. You know, the vast majority of them are going to be English speaking American audiences. So if you're American, it's nice, you know, sit there. You can, you know, easily converse with other people. Obviously, COTA this last year was very different with lockdowns and travel restrictions and obviously the Drive to Survive moment. But in prior years of going to F1 races, even within the United States, you know, there's, you know, you don't always, you know, it's a mix of fans from all different cultures. Which is, you know, equally enjoyable in its own right. And to go to another country and experience that, and, just the overall, the travel aspect of it. And like I said, you know, mentioned earlier about going on, you can make a whole vacation of it, I think is cool. So yeah, a lot of it just has to do, if you're looking for ease and like I said, and like Andy said about getting close, meeting a driver, getting a picture, a selfie, whatever, than 100% IndyCar, because you're never ever going to get that in F1 race. Your chances of that are slim to none. So yeah, very, very different experiences, but very both enjoyable in their own, you know, their own unique ways.
All right, next up, simple one. What is your favorite ice cream? John.
I don't really eat much ice cream, but I would probably go with like a chocolate peanut butter shake. It's probably like, if I was going to do it, it'd be my go-to.
Andy?
When do I just have that I just really liked? Ben and Jerry's, not the Cherry Garcia, but the one with Stephen Colbert on it is actually pretty good.
What?
Good.
I like that one. He's on it.
There's
ice
one
cream?
That he has. It's like, yes, he has. It's his face on it. And that's how I find it in the store. I look for his face and I go, oh, that one was pretty damn one. Good. I need to learn how to grocery shop is probably my, it's the takeaway there. But
I do all
fine.
My shopping online, so.
I'm not that bad.
Anyway, I just like plain old chocolate. Simple. Okay, next question. What other motorsports do you follow? I think clearly over our last conversation, we all follow IndyCar. But on top of that, Andy, what else?
I do follow MotoGP pretty closely. That one's harder sometimes to get up for because it's usually an hour or two earlier than F1, and it's usually on my non-F1 weekends. So if I can, I try to watch that live when I can. Some NASCAR, but I always do the same thing with NASCAR. I watch the first two, three races, and then it falls off. just always happens that way.
Yeah. World Endurance Championship. Well, we can get on that. I like all the endurance racing, honestly, that we get. You know, even the ones within the United States are always a blessing. MotoGP, you know, I was massive in that. We'll see how that progresses now that Rossi's gone, because he was definitely the guy I followed. So we'll see. Yeah, I mean, I grew up in NASCAR countries and worked in the industry for a little while. So, I mean, I follow that, but I'm kind of like you, Andy. I start off really strong every year and then I die off and then I'll pick it back up late in the season. But I do, you know, I love watching Chase Elliott and Kyle Larson and some of these young guys that can wheel. You know, I'm ready for that old regime to head on out, and I like these young guns coming up. So who knows, that might change.
I'm interested to see what that new
very, very excited about
does.
That. And they'll be racing, like 3 weeks in LA, something like that. So
they're converting the Coliseum into a really,
so that'll
short
be interesting. It's either going to be phenomenal or a complete shit show. So it'll be something though.
Okay, I think for me, IndyCar, biggest one, but after I went to a Formula E race last year, I went to the NASCAR race last year, or Roval, and I think after attending an event live, I got a lot more into both of those series, kind of as the seasons ended, and then, I'll watch the occasional WEC or IMSA race, and very, very occasionally watch
I forgot about Formula E, especially with the new cars coming. You guys know I'm an EV enthusiast, I'm very stoked to see.
I find myself watching more Formula E.
I hate the broadcasting.
Yeah. I mean, they're easy to watch.
I despise the broadcasting of Formula E with a passion. Cannot stand any bit of it. But the actual tech in the cars, I've enjoyed to see the progression. Looking forward to this next big jump. So hopefully they get on some proper tracks for once. It'd be nice as well.
I like it. It's an easy, quick watch. The races are 45 minutes. And then I like a lot of the drivers on the grid. And this year we get Dan Ticktum. So that'll just at least be entertaining. So. Okay. Next up, favorite band. I don't know if I have an answer to this.
Oh, boy.
I'm a Slipknot guy. Have been since like 2001. So Slipknot will always be my go-to. Deanna probably has no idea what Slipknot is. Corey Taylor, Stone Sour, anything? Nothing? Okay, well,
nothing.
You got some homework to do. I'm gonna send you a.
I don't know. This is like.
I'm gonna
up
send
my alley,
you a shot of Slipknot, and we'll see if what your reaction is to that.
Couple ones that I know I turn up for whenever I hear them on the radio. Mm-hmm. Linkin Park. Always. And then Local Boys from Chicago, nice. Disturbed. That was my youth right there when they were making it big.
I'm not good with bands. I just kind of listen to stuff and never really care about who it is. But I don't know. Does this need to be like an actual band or just like an artist?
It can be whatever you want.
I feel like I really enjoy kind of like 50s music, like an Etta James or an Ella Fitzgerald, that kind of vibe. Anyway.
Deanna, check your phone when you get
that works. I'm terrified. Okay, while I look at that, answer the question. If you could attend 3 Grand Prix, which ones would you choose?
Spa, Singapore, and Suzuka.
I would say Silverstone, Monza and Singapore.
I'm very distracted by this picture I just got sent.
My happy place when I'm having a day. Slipknot is my it's my calming voice.
Okay. Anyway, my 3 tracks.
This hopefully will not be Deanna's last time I'll be appearing on the podcast.
We'll see. I'll give it a listen.
I'll
give
send
anything
you
a try.
Top five or something like that.
Just a top one. I
well,
think a top one's there, probably going to be
I'll send you a,
top 30
I'll send you
seconds.
A crazy one and one you might have heard on the radio. And you can Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. top three Grand Prix. Monza. Particularly when Ferrari's good. I would love to be there just to witness a Ferrari win in all its glory. Two. Suzuka. And three. One day if I magically become a billionaire, sit on a giant watch yacht and watch Monaco. Nice. Actually, no, that's not on my list. I changed my mind. I don't like that one at all. Silverstone. Anyway.
All right. Nice.
Continuing on. Award or Herta?
Ooh.
Andy.
Ooh. Gun to my head. I love Pato, but right now Colton Herta.
Had the chance to meet both of them this year. That was cool. Well, 21. That's cool. Herta has raw speed. I feel like Award is a more complete package, maybe. I don't, you know, it's probably rough because I love both these guys and I cheer for both of them. If I was going to build a team around one, maybe that's a better way of saying it. I would probably, if I had to choose one, I would go with Award.
So entering into the 2021 season, I would have said Award. Coming out of it, I'm 100% with Herta. Seeing what he did in Nashville the last two races of the year, well, Long Beach, when he like came from 14th and then won that race pretty convincingly. He does.
I feel like Herta is like
throughout the year, and I think he has a really high ceiling. He had some bad luck this year. He's probably my favorite for 22 title.
Yeah, you just got to tell him he doesn't have to do it on every lap, but the laps he does it on,
he's got
amazing.
A little bit of a Verstappen Leclerc inside of him. Kind of a checkers or wreckers mentality, but yeah, again, experience comes, like that might change. Because seeing what he did in Nashville,
I'm very high on
was mind blowing. I mean, it was one of the best races I've ever seen in my life, and I've seen a lot of races in person.
Session was unreal. So. Okay, final question. We made it to the end. What two manufacturers would you like to join F1 and their driver lineups? There's a lot going on in that question. Who would like to start?
I'm going to skip the driver lineup part because.
Yeah, let's just do manufacturers.
Too many to choose from and too many awesome drivers out there that don't have an F1 seat that should. So I kind of looks like may get like the first two that come to mind is Audi and Porsche just because of their racing heritage and what they bring in other forms of racing. Aston Martin was a huge one for me. We got that. I'd love to see, you know, the Germans coming in, hopefully at least one, maybe two. But I would also love, and don't even like this manufacturer, like in general, like I probably wouldn't buy one, but I would love to see a Ford on a grid, Ford Racing. Again, the heritage on there. We know what they've done from an engine standpoint way back when. It would just be kind of cool to see that livery and maybe an American driver to go with it. Come on, Herta. Come on.
I'm also going to agree with Ford. Just kind of bring them back into the sport. Have an American manufacturer. That is not Haas. Really, actually have a manufacturer. And I think also kind of bringing back one of the historic names to hopefully more glory than their most recent run in Lotus.
Get the classic Lotus.
And
livery.
Bring back the green, yellow. Yeah, yes. Absolutely. The whole thing.
Bring back all that whole thing. Yeah, it was pretty cool. I would love to, I will make it 3 for 3 on in terms of American. I think Ford would be an awesome bellwether team to see back in F1. And then, if you had an American driver on top of that, you know, that's the magic
Colton
sauce
Herta.
Right there. Yeah, there you go. Non-American,
Mitsubishi.
Yeah, like I'm thinking like something like Maserati, like one of the exotics, like Lamborghini or Maserati or something like that, just to have the panache of being in there.
I could probably see Chevy going into F1 before I could see Ford coming back. Just because of their IndyCar involvement, the relationships there with McLaren, things like that. Obviously, IndyCar is going hybrid, got that other tie there. So I could, you know, maybe in the distant future, I'd be happy with either one, honestly. They both make great racing cars. But
all right, that's all the questions.
Yeah, I was going to say that brings us to the end of our Ask Us Anything segment or Ask Us Anything episode. We hope you've enjoyed it. We will, don't know exactly what the next plan is, but there will be news. There will be other things. We will be bringing it to you as it breaks. We will get continue our countdown to testing. We know we're going to have more car launches. We'll be all on top of that when we see them. So for Deanna, for John, it's been Andy. This is always super fun to do. And as always, may all your laps be fast.
Thank you for listening to today's episode of the Outlap F1 podcast. If you like what you heard, click that subscribe button and be sure to leave us a 5-star review. If you want to connect with us outside of the show, check out our website at www.outlapf1.com. Find us on Twitter and Instagram at @OutlapF1Podcast or email us at chatnow@outlapf1.com. As always, thank you so much for your support, and we'll see you on the next one.